This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the show. Now, if you listen very closely today, you will notice that I, along with my guest, Eric Peters, are both just a little bit under the weather. But, Eric, we're men with a mission, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to tough it out. I don't know what's going on, but I hope you're on the heel, or at least you're on the mend, well, I'd rather.
We will, as Chief Dan George said in the Outlaw Josie Wales, endeavor to persevere. Remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I also seem to remember one of the characters that ain't no end to doing good.
Oh,
or
yeah,
doing right.
Exactly.
So. Yeah.
Bill McKinney, who played one of the Toothless Men in Deliverance.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Wow. Well, there's a discussion in and of itself. I happen to think the Outlaw Josie Wales may be Clint Eastwood's greatest movie and possibly one of the best Westerns ever made. But that's just my opinion.
I agree. My personal opinion, it is absolutely one of his top three. I put it on the same par as Unforgiven, which I also thought was excellent.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the craziness that's going on right now. I'll start with, so apparently Easter Sunday was a lot more than Easter Sunday for at least some portion of America. By my reckoning, I think it's 0.00042% or something. I don't know. What was that White House Declaration of Trans Visibility Day all about?
As if they're not already visible enough. I mean, they keep shoving it in our face as if we don't see it. And somehow Easter, which is supposed to be the celebration of Christ's resurrection, becomes something about the most unchristian thing imaginable that you could possibly think of. It fascinates me that they're so deliberately provocative and in your face. It's as if they want to provoke a reaction with this stuff.
I believe that is actually part of the strategy. And I think it goes back to Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, which is the action is the reaction of your intended target. So you rub your intended target's nose in it, you provoke them, and when they speak out or lash out in anger, you're the victim.
Yeah, I'm noticing a pattern here, too, and the pattern being that I think what they would very much like is for some patriarchal, hate-filled, transphobic, misogynistic, white supremacist to do something so that then they have the pretext, the excuse to launch one of their political purges against anybody that they considered a political opponent.
Yep. And I'm not trying to sound all high and mighty here, but I'm grateful that nobody has really taken the bait. But at the same time, I'm getting dang tired of it. Yep. And I know I'm not the only one.
Well, it is tiresome. You know, they've worn all of our patience thin. On one level, with regard to this trans visibility thing, on a human level, I can be sympathetic, and I am sympathetic toward people who are confused about their identity. I mean, I would be sympathetic if I had a crazy uncle who thought he was Napoleon, but I would try to get the guy therapy and help rather than egg him on by addressing him as Your Majesty or Emperor.
Right. Yeah, it's well, and it makes you wonder how much farther can it be pushed before people finally put their foot down and say no more. I think we may have reached the point, or we're very, very near it, where the slap back is gonna come. And I'm not saying necessarily that that's a call to action and we should go out there and rub other people's faces in it or do anything that would be considered aggressive. But at the same time, if you don't at least draw the line somewhere, how far are they willing to take it?
Yeah, it's essentially about saying enough already with this. Of a piece with the masking, it's about saying, no, I'm not doing that. It's not about being mean to people. It's just about not playing along with these idiocies any longer. Most of us, I think, are okay with it. If a guy wants to wear a dress and he wants to call himself Cheryl, it's a free country. You never hear that anymore, of course, and that's telling by itself.
Right.
I don't really care about that. If he wants to do that, that's fine. That's his prerogative. I've got an orange Trans Am. People might think that's weird. But when they tell you, when they demand that you address them as a woman, you use their preferred pronouns, that you, in other words, that you stomp reality underneath your foot and defer to their insanity, at that point, your patience begins to wear thin. There's a really important principle there, too, because if they can tell you that you have to agree that a biological man is a she, they can tell you anything. That scales. And I think ultimately that's what this is all about. This is just a way for them to establish the principle that reality is what they, whatever they tell you it is.
Yeah, it's about getting us to bend the knee. You will bend the knee. You will confess this, even if you don't believe it. And I don't know if you saw this video from James O'Keefe, the Project Veritas guy.
Project Veritas, yeah.
Oh my goodness, he had someone shared a video with me last week, and basically, here's the summary of it. James O'Keefe asked his audience, "What is your price?" And he says, "If you name your price in a dollar amount," he says, then you're a sellout." But he says, if your price is your life, that's the only thing that you can really say, I believe in this strongly enough, you know, I'm willing to die for it. He says, your price has to be your life or it's nothing at all. And it just hit me that's profound.
It is profound, you know, and it's hard, but it's true. And sometimes the hard things, the true things are the most important things. In fact, I'd say they are always the most important things.
Yep, and here's the thing. I know you're a pretty seasoned veteran of the Stand Up for Freedom and Fight for Your Freedom, war that's been going on actually pretty much forever. But you're very well seasoned in this. But if you don't draw that line before you're standing at that moment of decision, the chances are better than not you're going to knuckle under and go along just because that seems the least painful way to go.
Absolutely. It's the death of a thousand cuts. You know, there's a lot to that. You make a little compromise here. You give a little ground there. And eventually you have no ground left to stand on. And that's a very important thing. You know, people think certain things are small things. You know, I used to talk about seatbelt laws and people would say, oh, it's not a big deal. You know, that the cars have to have seatbelts and not a big thing that the government requires you to wear the seatbelt. And I would say, well, if the government can require a car company to put a seatbelt in the car, and if the government can punish you for not wearing the seatbelt, then you've opened a Pandora's box and the government can say practically anything it wants to, because all it has to do is say, well, it's going to keep you safer and therefore we're going to make you do it. And if you don't do it, we're going to punish you for it. And look at where we are with these cars now.
And also look at the example of Real ID. When that was first floated, many states came out, no, we're not going to do that. Hell no, we're not going to do that. My daughter got her driver's license last week. And guess what? Well, there's that bright gold star.
Yeah, and they're pariahizing people with that, too. You know, they're gradually ghettoizing people. If you don't do it, like in my state, Virginia, you still can opt out. But if you opt out and don't get the real ID, you can't fly commercially anymore. You will not be allowed to enter various federal buildings, such as courts, for example, if you don't have that thing. So, you know, essentially it's like the yellow star, right? They're telling you you're a second-class citizen. You're somebody who's been marginalized. And once they marginalize people, it becomes a whole lot easier to do really awful things to the marginalized people.
You know, I had the same choice when I got my license in Idaho when we moved back here a few years ago. And I said, I don't want the real ID one. And was warned, well, you know, it's going to be necessary to fly. Right now I have a passport, and as long as that's valid, that's what I use for ID. Well, there's my passport. If I'm going to fly, that's what I'll use. But, man, I resent being backed into a corner. I don't even have words for how much I resent it.
Well, you know, it doubly resents. Oh, I'm screwing up my possessives here, but my resentment toward it balloons when I reflect that you and I have to show ID to get on an airplane, but these illegal aliens, these immigrants, are shown, hey, come on over, and we'll let you fly wherever you want to without an ID. They don't have to abide by these rules that you and I have to abide by. So it shows it's not about whatever the pretext is. It's just about punishing a certain class of people, and in this country it's become the people who are dumb enough to abide by the rules and the regulations while giving a pass to the people who don't because they're favored in some way.
Yep, and of course dividing us up into little competing tribes, you know, competing for favors, that's a good way to keep our attention focused on each other rather than on the people who are actually causing so many of the problems.
Yeah, you raise a really good point. You know, I really love reading about history because history helps me to understand what's going on now. And two of the great empires of the last 100 years, the Soviet Union and the Habsburg Empire, succeeded in controlling their populations by having this polyglot population, people of different ethnicities and religions and so on. And the central government deliberately contrived to keep these people constantly at each other's throats and agitating against each other because that kept them from focusing on the real source of their problems, which is this coercive authoritarian central government.
Well, I can only speak for myself, but, you know, my mind is made up and my price has been set. according to what James O'Keefe had said. So persuading me is going to be a pretty long uphill trudge for anybody who thinks that they're going to persuade me. Just give up a little more of your freedom. Give up some more. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. And if more of us did that, it's such a simple thing and yet such a hard thing. If more of us would just do that and say no and not allow them to continue to take more ground, all of this stuff would end. If enough of us would just say it's not acceptable, we're not going to tolerate it anymore.
Hear, hear. Hold that thought. Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com is my guest. You will find a link to his website in my show notes. These are show notes for April 2nd, 2024 at thebrianhydeshow.com. Stay close. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I have Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com on the line with me. And Eric, I got to tell you, I took a little road trip this last weekend. And I was paying attention, especially as we would stop to gas up, just noticing all of the EVs that are out there, especially going through Salt Lake. Apparently, you know, Teslas are still pretty trendy, and saw a number of other different EVs, but I've never been more grateful to not be driving one than I was this weekend. And then I saw your article, the no cash charge. Talk to me about this. I know that in Germany, for instance, my daughter and my son-in-law have an electric car. But it costs, and it costs a bunch to charge it up, but you can't do it with cash. Why is that?
Yeah, that's the take-home point here. Not only is it expensive to use these fast chargers, it's roughly comparable in cost to what it costs to gas up a conventional car. You can't pay cash. You have to download an app onto your smartphone that then debits your account, the one that's tied to the app that you wave at the charger, and that's how you that's how you use it. And I think that's very interesting. You know, it's one of these little subtle things that's part of this push to electrify things. And it's all about controlling things. You know, there's a degree of anonymity with regard to cash, being able to just, you know, put $30 in cash in your tank and nobody knows that you did it. And, you know, the transaction is between you and the gas station, and that's it. What they want is to have micromanaging control over the transaction. And more than that, they want to be able to decide whether you'll be allowed to charge. Because after all, you know, all of this stuff is wired into their hive mind collective. And if they decide that, well, the climate crisis is such that we can't allow people to drive today, then your app won't work and you won't be able to get a charge. And that's just part of how they're going to control our mobility. And that's part of this whole EV push. Although it's actually what the EV push is ultimately all about.
So is this part and parcel of all these 15-minute cities that we hear being floated around? Oh, it'll be so convenient. Why, you won't even need to drive. You could just walk everywhere. But it seems like there's an electronic gatekeeping that goes on with those cities as well.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, again, this is about centralizing things. With EVs, the power source is centralized because utilities are centralized. You can't realistically charge an EV using solar. And even at home, you're grid connected, and that's the central power source that goes back to wherever the generator is. And they control that. And, you know, if you want to use these public fast chargers, which are the only places where you can get enough electricity in a somewhat reasonable amount of time, meaning like 45 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is, you know, you do it at their pleasure. And there's no reason at all that they couldn't use, these chargers couldn't have something that accepts cash. You go to a self-checkout, the self-checkout accepts cash at Walmart or the supermarket. So it's not because it's technically difficult. They don't want you using cash. They want everything to be electronic because it's so much easier to control things that are electronic.
Yep. And in the name of convenience, I think a lot of people are willing to, you know, look the other way and, well, what's, you know, it's, we're not giving up that much, but they're not paying attention to the direction that it's leading. Not to mention
convenience is seductive.
The incline
is really seductive, you know, particularly when you're dealing with entities that did not have your best interests at heart. You know, they're not magnanimously offering you a convenience because they want to help you. It's because it's something that is of benefit to them, whether it's in terms of being able to monetize you, in terms of having the information and data about you that they can resell or use to sell you something, or just, you know, for the simple delight of being able to control you more. That's what it's always all about with these things.
Wow. Well, I hate to say it, but it just makes me more determined than ever that no, that's not a path I'm willing to walk down.
Nor I. I really grow to appreciate my old truck and my old muscle car with each passing day even more.
Yeah, I believe that we're going to come to a point where people will start to recognize that the pen has been shut quietly behind them after they got into mm-hmm. it. And I look yep. at what you and I are doing. Is I know some people think it's just paranoid ranting, but I really think what we're trying to do is warn people, don't walk into that pen. That free cheese,
yeah,
it's not free.
Yeah, and by the way, you probably have heard or even know from personal experience that they're trying to push this cashless thing at sports venues, for example, even down to like local, you know, your kids' baseball game, you know, the county fair, things like that, where they won't let you in unless you swipe your app and use your phone to pay. They won't take cash anymore. You know, this is an ominous thing that they're working on habituating and normalizing and doing it. By telling people, oh, look how convenient it is.
I'm sure you've seen the videos. I think they were out of the UK of someone going into an Aldi's or something like that. And nope, we don't accept cash. And the guy's like, well, I'm leaving my cash right here and I'm going to take the strawberries that I'm buying and walking out the door. And people are having a come apart. You can't do that. Well, he gave you the money for it, but it has to be paid for electronically.
Actually, he can do that, at least for now in this country at any rate. Cash is still legal tender. They can't tell you legally that you cannot pay with cash, I think. And this would be a good way to prompt perhaps a proverbial test case about it when you encounter that. I've done that before. I've just put money on the counter, like at a coffee shop. I'm not going to play their little game. Yep. And that's how we stop this, by not playing along with it.
Hear, hear. Can I pick your brain for some general automotive knowledge?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Hyundai. There's a time when that name was a joke. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, people, oh, yeah, that thing's held together with paper clips and a doggy do or whatever. I mean, we're talking 30 years ago. Hyundai was not considered
Excel.
Great. Yeah.
yeah.
But today, it looks like Hyundai is actually kind of coming into their own. I'd like to get your impression of have they upped their game? Are they you know, competing with the big boys at this point?
Oh, hugely. And it's not just Hyundai. It's Kia. Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis, which is the luxury division of Hyundai, which makes some really nice vehicles that are priced significantly less than some of the mainline luxury brands. They've kind of adopted the same program that Toyota did with Lexus. You remember when Lexus came out, I think, back in 1989, because they thought, well, nobody's going to buy a high-priced Toyota, so they created Lexus as their boutique brand. And what they did was came out with the first LS400, which was a better car than a Mercedes E-Class for a lot less money. And people started to buy them, you know, and the same thing is happening with Hyundai and Kia. And they're doing it to the now established brands like Toyota and Honda.
So what changed?
Well, the main thing that changed is, you know, this is what the free market does. You know, if you can compete, you can offer a better vehicle, a better product for less money, people will tend to buy that thing, right? So they just came out with good vehicles at good prices, and people finally, you know, came to say, hey, that's a pretty good deal. I think I'll go for that. So they're doing quite well. And I particularly like they haven't fully embraced this EV tar baby either. And that goes generally for all of the Japanese brands. They are being very, very hesitant, if you like, about getting on board with this EV thing.
Boy, that's a big plus right there. Actually, I'm going to make a note of that. And the warranty, I've heard that they have one of the best warranties out there. Is it because people are going to have warranty work done all the time, or are they just that confident in what they're selling?
Well, yeah, it's essentially what they're selling you there is psychological security. I think you're talking about the 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain
yes.
warranty that
yeah.
they give with their vehicles. And it makes you feel good, doesn't it? You know, you buy a vehicle and you know that if anything significant happens to the big parts, the engine and the transmission, that, hey, they're under warranty. That makes you feel good about buying the vehicle because you know that, well, if something happens, they're going to take care of it. So they just do that as a way of instilling confidence in their products.
I knew you would have a solid take on this, and I thank you for letting me pick your brain about it just a little bit.
No worries.
So again, we're talking with Eric Peters from ericpetersautos.com. Eric, your website can be found where?
EPautos.com. There's also a mirror at ericpetersautos.com. Either one will get you to the same place.
Okay. And you'll find a lot of good food for thought there. If you have automotive questions or if you have questions about a particular make of car, Eric reviews pretty much everything out there. Is Mercedes back on the menu or no?
Well, we'll see what happens with that. I haven't heard anything about them, but I'll have to keep you posted.
Okay. Anyway, you could spend a lot of good time on his website. Eric, thanks again for your time. Always great to visit with you.
You bet, Brian.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.